Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a commentary episode of NYPD Blue Balls, so that means we are watching Season 7, Episode 9, Jackass of NYPD Blue, while recording Season 7, Episode 9 of NYPD Blue Balls. So if you want to follow along with us, you'll probably need Hulu. That is where we are watching the episodes. You could also find the episodes on DVD. I honestly don't know if it's on Amazon. Every time I go there, I get differing information. But I know it's on Hulu, and I believe it's on DVD. Even though it might be hard to find in different countries, you might go through other means to get it, but I would never encourage you to do so. Anyway, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy this one, and I'll be talking to you at the end of the episode. But until then, listen to the 1, 2, 3, go when this song ends, and we'll be right into Season 7, Episode 9, Jackass of NYPD Blue. Peace. 1, 2, 3, press play. All right, everybody, welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is Season 7. Episode 9, Jackass, which you may remember was also the title of a very popular stunt and prank show on MTV, which became successful movies. This episode starts out with Eddie Gibson pacing around the squad, waiting for Sipowitz.
I feel like the reason you don't see Eddie Gibson more is because he would just be another Metaboy.
I mean, you're not completely wrong.
John, like, this whole scene just makes me get like Metaboy vibes about him.
Oh yeah, for sure. I also like this. Okay, so this is gonna piss off Dad if he ever hears it. Nothing reminds me of Dad more than when Sipowitz has a problem with something that is completely irrelevant to his life.
Like what?
In that scene, you may have missed it. John came in with like an interesting hat on, like it's not a normal hat, and Sipowitz sees it and gives him a look, and then John like sheepishly takes it off. It's like, what the fuck's the problem with the hat? What is the problem with the hat? Who cares? Who cares
about that? That is white fragility. That is white fragility. And the wild, because it's just white men not being okay with other people living their lives how they want to live. And they feel like, because, you know, other old white men used to just tell people what to do, that they can. I'm not saying our dad's like that. But
so I don't completely disagree. I think it has more to do with self-esteem of him being like, I wouldn't wear a hat like that. People shouldn't wear hats like that. And you're like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, no, but it's also that he feels comfortable enough with John and like likes John that he can tell John that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if it was someone just sitting on the opposite side on the bench, he would have made a comment to John or somebody about the hat later. But because it's John, he feels it's even more okay for him to tell John to take it off.
Yeah, which is so stupid.
Like, well, if you want to break it down to even crazier levels, he thinks that John should do what he tells him to do. It's crazy.
Speaking of crazy levels, basically Eddie goes to Sipowitz and is like, a dude that I set up with my niece had to call out, and so now she needs a date. I need you to do it. And Sipowitz is like, no, no deal, can't do it, whatever. And Eddie was like, well, at least take the $100 bills, which in 2022 money is $175. And here's where Sipowitz looks at the hat again and is, like, disgusted with it. You're like, what the fuck's your problem? But basically, Eddie is like...
That is something our father does, though. And he will get pissed at it, but it is true. Yeah.
He 100% does that.
Why is she wearing? Why would she wear a green top like that? Like, what is she wearing a green top for right now?
He does it with tattoos all the time too. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? And it's like, it doesn't matter. You didn't do it. It's fine.
My favorite thing is when you would just be sitting there and someone would walk by with a tattoo and he wouldn't comment on it right away, but then he'd be like, huh, I wonder if that'll look good in 20 years.
Anyway,
even look up at it. He sees it from a distance, but when they walk by, he won't look at it. And he'll just like make that sly ass comment and shit. I didn't notice this thing 400 yards away and it didn't bother me up until right when they passed me.
We passed the credits. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is Season 7, Episode 9, Jackass. They have a DOA in an apartment building. The landlord not going in to identify because it is stanky up in there. The guy's been dead, I think, 3 or 4 days is what they come to.
Oh, I'm not going in there.
I mean, someone's got to identify the body.
And then clean this shit up and then I'll come back.
They confirm that it is Ricky Guerrero. Which, fun fact, is a name I can't seem to spell right ever.
Ricky or Guerrero?
Guerrero.
Guerrero.
Yeah, I think I always put too many R's, and then I just fuck it up every single time.
Do you know how to spell banana, or are you an idiot, too?
Fuck you. But anyway.
Good comeback. I think you answered my question. I appreciate it.
So in the apartment, they have some graffiti above the body that they think might be gang-related. It says PR, go home, and then might be this gang tag. Metavoy almost throws up, and they fuck with him. They haven't yet, but they do. And Baldwin is immediately like, that's not really a gang tag. It doesn't look right. Sipowicz lets everybody know that he doesn't know what a Star of David is.
Weird. Sipowicz isn't caught up on his Jewish culture.
Surprisingly not. And then Metavoy is talking about bringing up the Hollandaise, and then Sorensen intentionally makes him throw up.
Why did you say it like that, Kirk?
Because that's what he said.
He's intentionally talking about bringing up the Hollandaise.
That's how I say Hollandaise, brah.
It was just really funny to the outside.
Suddenly, I don't know, all this talk of vomit and Hollandaise, I suddenly really want some Arby's.
Fucking gross, dude. Have you ever had Hollandaise sauce?
No, it's really bad. I've never really enjoyed it.
You probably can't taste it through that gross fucking meat that you eat at Arby's.
This scene has a line in it that I love. So, Sorensen and Sipowicz run down, death, there's some graffiti, shot in the back of the head, been there 3 or 4 days. And Jones is like, I got pictures. And he's like, where's Metavoy? He's canvassing. So then Fancy is like, well, then what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, I took photos of the gang tag.
Oh, no, and they want to talk about it, too, because he comes from the bias unit and, pertinent information.
And eventually it gets to Fancy and Jones talking about it. And Jones says, I don't think it's an actual gang tag. And Fancy's like, oh, maybe it's somebody who's trying to get rep. And Jones is like, maybe. I don't think so. And he's like, well, we got to talk to your old boss, Abner, anyway.
Well, it's just Fancy just doing things like he always does by the book, you know?
Well, yeah.
I think Fancy's just following protocol.
because I do think that fancies, like, the back of... Because these two stir the pot super fast. Sipowicz and Sorensen are like, yeah, there's some baggage tied to that decision. And then Jones is like, yeah, I tried to steer it off of him. And then they're like, well, Fancy, if he's got baggage, he's going to do what he wants. And it's like, or he's covering his bases so he doesn't get a callback going, why didn't you include the bias unit?
Yeah, or he's doing...
his job?
I don't know, his job? Like that's why he's a boss, because he does follow all of these protocols that keep things in place and keep people safe and don't get people to lose their job, blah, 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 blah. You know, all that fun shit.
All that fun protocol shit. And then this scene, I want to know if you interpreted it like I did. Sipowicz is like, I got to ask you a question. He hems and haws and takes absolutely forever.
Yeah, and it's only, Kirk, I get it, dude. Like, I mean, I hope I don't ever have to feel like the loss of, like, a loved one like that, right?
Yeah.
But it's just a date, dude.
It's also, like, the most awkward forced date ever, so it's like, who cares what happens? It's just Eddie Gibson. And he's
paying for your meal.
Yeah, it's free. It's a free meal. Go get some
food. The only thing you gotta do is, like, wear a nice shirt and be nice.
But he says to Sorensen, he's like, I gotta date Eddie Gibson's half disfigured niece. And Sorensen's response is like, wait, is she actually disfigured?
Yeah, and not once did Eddie say, like, she was gross or anything.
He just said she's like plain. He did say that she was plain.
That's right. That's right.
Which is
but
not.
He takes it to disfigured.
And what's weird is Sorensen's, his reaction seems to be like, wait, is she actually disfigured? And Sipowicz goes, no. And he's like, then who cares? It's like, which the inference of that is, well, if she's disfigured, then maybe you shouldn't. Because why would you want
it? But the other thing is, Eddie's not telling you to, like, fall in love with her either.
No.
Eddie's not going, like, hey, like, I'm hoping that what comes from this is an arranged marriage. Like, or I'm hoping that you can make her, like, you can lay her down, give her, have her bear children and, like, make her a wife. Like, he's just asking you to cover and take her to dinner because someone who was going to cancel.
He didn't go, like, hey, and then this part is great where he's like, let's not talk, like, at one point, to talk about how these guys are so incapable of having legitimate conversations about their feelings. Sorensen's like, well, how do you feel about it? He's like, let's not talk about that touchy-feely stuff. He's like, well, guess what? This touchy-feely stuff has led us to this fucking bathroom.
Yeah.
Where you can't ask a simple question. Like, just fucking, it's, we're only doing this because of how you feel.
Yeah, this is all about your feelings and your inability to, like, have a relationship with any female in the world.
So here's Abner going over a story basically just to insult Fancy, saying, like,
you think it's to insult him?
Yeah, because he tells a story where he's like, okay, there's a guy run over by a car, but he doesn't have any money in his pocket. Should I call in your unit to say there was a robbery? He said, anybody can figure out that this isn't a real gang hit. You're wasting my time. And Fancy's like, I only did it because you could have turned this into a big issue if I didn't call you ahead of time.
And they already have beef, so Fancy's only being proactive because it's his job.
So Abner comes out to insult Jones to his face in the middle of the squad by saying, I thought you would have learned something in the time you were with me. And Jones is like, well, that also includes ruling it out, which is why you were called. And then Fancy comes out and hands him his jacket to basically be like, how about you get your bitch ass out? And then Abner takes off his glasses and they go into the room, which seems like, let's fucking fight. I actually really enjoyed this scene where everyone's like, just pretend nothing's happening.
I love Metal Boy. Metal Boy actually, like, kind of kills it right there.
Where he's like, should I go in there? Did he say, like, and do what?
He's like, and do what, Baldwin? Be a witness? That's what he says. And do what? Be a witness?
Sip and Sorensen come back with a woman who is not Mimi, the DOA girlfriend. And everybody has this awkward moment when they realize they're both in that room together, alone.
I'll tell you this, she's dressed like a Mimi.
Okay. Alright. Let's not disparage all Mimis of the world. I'm sure the Mimis of Mimi's Cafe would never dress like that.
Damn, I haven't eaten at a Mimi's Cafe in a while.
I know.
I'm saying I miss it. It's just been a while.
Me either. I haven't been there in a while, but I didn't miss it either. So this whole scene seems like Abner is like, you're being mean. And then Fancy's like, what is your problem?
No, yeah, it feels like they both are like, one of them is like, don't embarrass me. And he's like, don't embarrass me. He's like, I wasn't. Yeah, you were. No, I was trying to show this kid that you were good. Well, I was trying to show this kid. All right, fine. And then they, like, walk away from each other.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. And the big takeaway is this guy's like, maybe I tried to send Jones over here so he doesn't see the world like I do. And then your response is to disrespect me in front of him. And it's like, what? Once again, this Lieutenant Abner is played by James Pickens Jr., JPJ, most famous from being, I think, the head honcho on Grey's Anatomy.
I think he does a pretty good job.
Oh, he's a good actor.
I think the scene's pretty good.
He's also in later parts of this episode, and he's pretty good at that, too. But, like, it really feels like he's like, you did this just to embarrass me. And then Fancy's like, no, I didn't. You're overreacting. And he's like, fine. Well, copy me on the reports, then. I was like, what? Okay.
He's bouncing back and forth like a ping pong ball.
Keep in mind, this is the same show where at one point, Sipowitz and Fancy walked into the bathroom together and then literally punched each other.
Oh, yeah, just beat the fuck out of each other.
I was like, what? So, this woman who's not Mimi, she gives up her actual name, which I cannot find on my notes. It's like Erica, I think.
Oh, that was Laura something.
Nope, you're right. It's Laura.
Laura Moser.
Laura Krebs. I think it's because she has cribs, if you know what I'm saying. She's a sex worker. But the point is,
that's the worst kick.
She is saying, I'm not Mimi. Can't you figure out that I'm not Mimi? Isn't there a way to figure out who I am? Then she asks for like $1,000 to show them where Mimi strolls. And then Danny's like, how about 50? And then we don't look into your priors to then arrest you. And she's like, fine. I was like, that's a pretty big dip in negotiations.
That bitch ain't making $1,000 a night. And why I said she dresses like a Mimi is because I know all Mimis like to wear crochet tops.
Oh, I thought it was the fake fur. I just realized there's a lot of business going on in her earrings. Her earrings look like chandeliers.
She got little people swinging from them?
She got Sia on them chandeliers.
It works.
So this part is also funny, where he's like, I gotta go in there.
I hate you so much for that.
Do you hate Medavoy for sing-songingly telling him, like, if he wants to tell you, Baldwin? I also love how Medavoy just straight up says, like, you aren't the first person to not listen to my advice. It's kind of like him going, nobody fucking respects me, do what you want.
I feel like if you were to go to Medavoy's house and steam up his bathroom, that's what would be written on his bathroom mirror.
No one respects me, do what you want.
Do what you want. No one respects me. Do what you want.
So Jones talks to Fancy saying, like, did you do this for a personal reason? And Fancy just straight up goes, like, look, sometimes decisions can be for both. Which is him saying kind of yes, kind of no. Which is a little awkward.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
But the other part of this...
basically what he's saying.
Yeah, basically. But then he catches him and says, has Abner acted like that before? His conduct, his character. And Jones says, no, he seems more high-strung and on edge. And then comes back with, are you concerned for Lieutenant Abner? And Fancy just shuts it off. No, we're not talking about it.
Yeah. Well, it's a touchy subject.
Yeah, I mean, caring about another man is a touchy subject.
No, you dumb. Like, being police officers, I'm like...
No, dumb.
Thinking about, like someone losing it being a cop, like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, they have a gun.
Now, this is what a Mimi dress is like.
Wait, are you that far ahead of me?
Oh, am I? I can pause it if I need to.
Tell me
when she's walking up the stairs.
Walking up the stairs right now? Yeah.
Okay, that's where I am.
She's, you know, Lisa Leguilio? Leguilloo. Legulio?
I was going to say, what's the dealio?
Yeah, and my jokes are bad. Sipowicz calls Eddie and says he'll do it, but with conditions. We'll get back to Mimi in a second. We got to watch this awkward-ass scene where he's like, look, I'll date this woman, even though I'm not paying for the meal, but I'm not taking her ass to the movies. And I'm not paying her up.
I don't think he asked for any of that. Like, I think he just asked you to, like, take her out. Like that's it.
Yeah, I think it was just Sipowicz being like, I have to be in control of the situation. I have to decide what's going on.
He makes this mad awkward.
Oh, for sure.
And I love how he's like, you'll tell her how to recognize me. And it's like, the bald, ugly dude coming inside is what he should say.
The bald, ugly dude. I was going to say the hedgehog. He is also standing there with half his coat on. He didn't finish putting his coat up before calling. And then he asks John if he has time for a little haircut. And John's like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with a little buff up, you know. Really highlight how bald you are. So this woman, like, I feel like she did a great job, and it makes me sad, if that makes sense.
Why?
Because, like, her character is sad. Sex worker, she plays it so well where at first she's like, Ricky Guerrero? Fuck that guy. I hate that guy. He's a piece of shit. Hopefully I never see him again. Like, talks mad shit on Ricky Guerrero. And they ask, how long has it been? And she's like, not long enough, that piece of shit. And then someone's like, yeah, he died. And then she It's like, oh, well, that's fucked up. She's also got a whole lot of weight going on in the earring department, too.
They just look heavy as fuck.
God damn.
But there's probably nothing in them. They probably don't weigh anything. But they just look heavy as shit on her ears. They are pulling down on them lobes.
Yeah, it's like she's trying to stretch her earlobes without plugs.
It's like her lobes are Lisa lobes and they're trying to stay.
I was trying so hard to figure out a Lisa Loeb song and I can't.
I said it, stay.
Oh shit, that's right, it is. It's just that word.
I miss you.
They let her know, like, you gotta give us something because you're the last person to have been with him in that shitty apartment. And then she's like, look, I'm not going to give up my son, which her buddy Laura mentioned her son, Isaiah. And she basically is like,
well, she mentioned that Isaiah and him didn't get along, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's from the first meeting with Laura, she basically is like, if her son's involved, that dude like basically provoked him.
Yeah.
And now she's struggling with, oh, do I give up my son? Could you make sure he doesn't know it was me? And then Sipwoods is like, how about this? How about you just fucking do it? And he finds out it's you, so you can leave and get your Jones. Because if not, then we're just going to keep you here, and then you have to kick. And he will never find out it was you. And then she's like, gives him up immediately. And she's like, that was a real shitty thing to do. And Swords is like, shut your mouth.
Well, I mean, you gave him up. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know, like.
Yeah, that's why her character makes me sad.
Yeah, no, 100%. There's a few characters they have to do that sometimes.
Because they, like, yeah, they use her addictions and her life situation to give up her fucking son who. This scene also makes me sad because this guy does a great job. David Mitchell plays Isaiah.
Yeah, he does. It's a good scene.
Where Jones, basically with no help from Sipowicz or Sorensen, slowly gets out of Isaiah that he, had problems with Ricky and things went too far. It's just a really good scene, but it makes me sad. And also, because the main crux of the argument between Isaiah and Ricky is Ricky would sell Isaiah's TV and Nintendo to get drugs. And Isaiah said he went out and bought a whole new setup, and then Ricky sold it again for drugs. Where is Ricky getting the money to buy that shit?
You mean Isaiah?
Yeah, where's Isaiah getting the money to buy that shit again?
Oh, maybe it has a job? You racist, you don't think a black kid has a job?
Well, it sounds like, I thought he was like in high school.
Damn, you didn't say no, you didn't, wow.
What did you say?
Wow. I said, wow, Kirk, you're racist, you don't think a black kid has a job, and you didn't.
No, my response to that is I thought he was in high school. I thought he had a lot of time in high school. And if he's in high school and he has a job, how would he
even... You can't be in high school and have a job?
Well, how would he even have time to fucking play Nintendo?
You grew up in a middle-class life and didn't have to work. Like, you know, doesn't mean all the kids...
God damn it, Kyle.
...got to sit on porcelain gold toilets. You know what I mean?
Maybe I'm just interpreting the story too quickly, but it seemed like this kid had enough money to buy a new setup immediately after Ricky sold it, which how would he be able to do it? Maybe he saved up for it. Maybe he has a job. I don't know.
Maybe he had saved up for something else. I don't know.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It just seemed like my first thought is like, where did he get the money to do that? Because he doesn't seem like he has a great living situation with his mom, with living with Ricky and shit like that.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he's not, like, that doesn't mean he's just living there and, like, saving money and working on his own to get out of there, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of different things, but you are right. You're 100%. I thought he was in high school, too. I was just fucking with you. And I found it odd because, like, it was literally, like, the way he makes it sound is, like, yeah, he fucked with my shit, and so I went out the next day and got new shit.
And it's like, okay.
And it's like, oh, back then, that shit was, like, expensive then. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I remember the N64 years.
I miss those. I wish I would play it sometimes.
It's good shit. You can play N64 games on Switch.
I don't have a Switch, so.
So, yeah, Baldwin talks him through it, and, turns out he covered it. He tried to cover it up with the gang graffiti, and Jones pretends like he was fooled by it. Abner gives him a good interview. How hilarious. What was that?
No, go ahead.
How hilarious is Metavoice face? We're just like, I'm not gonna say shit.
Why is Metavoy there?
I don't know.
Exactly. It just kind of felt like, oh, Baldwin's in there. We gotta have Metavoy standing doing something.
So, right now, Abner is like, he seems pretty sad. And I think the scene would tell you it's because that boy's situation is sad. But I also feel like it can be interpreted as he's sad that Baldwin has been morphed into someone that would do that to a young black kid. You know what I mean?
No, I don't think it's that at all. What I think he is sad about, uh-huh. What I think he's sad about is because he makes that statement. He goes, you know, I think that's the first, Jones is the first African-American male to like, yeah, treat that boy with respect or make that boy feel some type of way. And then he goes, and he was doing it to get a confession. And he goes, and then he says the line, so many lost. I think he's realizing, personally, I think he's realizing that in his job, you know, he took it thinking that he could be a voice for the black community and help the black community. But I think he's realizing that you can't help the black community through policing.
Mm.
It's too late. Maybe he should do it in a different way, because, like, you know, black police officers aren't necessarily there to help the black community. They're there to solve crimes. And it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's a too deep of a thought on it, but I don't think that he's mad about Jones, because at the end he says, tell Jones he did a good job for me. Because he does a good interview, and he does a really good job, and I think that he wants to reflect that, but I think he's having an existential crisis on what he thinks the job is now.
Well, yeah, because it's implied. Because as we see, Fancy's kind of concerned for Abner.
Simmons is getting a haircut, but we don't give a fuck.
Yeah, it's just him.
He's being a little bitch about getting paid to go on a date.
And here we get some more topless Jones.
Oh, they're definitely hitting home on that one right now.
And they're going, hey, ladies, it's not just side titty. Sometimes it's some Jones.
We're really sorry that we didn't show you sexy men for a while. We're going to make it up to you.
We didn't give you pecs and abs. But yeah, I think because it's implying, I think, through Fancy, that Abner is going through something that's not really related to just their beef. Like, there's something else going on with Abner. And Abner mentions, like, he's like, so many lost, and he says that's the first time an African-American man cared about him, and it was to get a confession. And he also said earlier in the episode, he's like, I was trying to save Jones from seeing the world like I do. So part of me was wondering, is Abner, like, he feels bad that, maybe it's what you're saying, that, like, they can't really do anything from this position to help anybody, really.
Yeah, or he's, like, he was in the bias unit, so everything was, like, black and white and cut and dry, and maybe he's realizing it's not anymore. And he didn't want Jones to grow up like that, or, like, use his, like, grow in the job to become him, because he's starting to, like, resent the job. I don't know. But this is a good scene between both of them.
Because, Fancy brings up a good point, because there is early intervention for depression of cops, because there is a issue with cops committing suicide. That's why the term eating your gun is a thing. But he basically kind of pontificates with Jones, like, if you do that, you ruin the guy's career, essentially. It's kind of like, if you do it, you have to be sure you're actually preventing something, or else you're just making a dude's career harder for the rest of the time.
Yeah. You're going to cause a lot of pain to him, for sure, or them, for sure.
And Jones says, oh, maybe I'll call him and thank him for his kind words, and Fancy's like, do that. And earlier in the episode, Fancy was like, how about we go to lunch? How about you tell me how smart I am? Like, he's trying to relate to Abner on a personal level, because he sees something's going on. Now this scene...
Don't you think it's funny that I'll say it after. Go ahead. This scene what?
Well, this scene, Deborah Monk, who has been on many seasons as Katie Sipowicz. Sipowicz
is that what the TV show Monk is about? Her life?
No, not at all. But she was also in the classic movie Devil's Advocate, starring Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino.
I can't believe you led with Keanu Reeves.
But Sipowicz lies to Katie and his son about where he's going, saying it's like a retirement racket. And Katie is like...
She smells the bullshit.
Yeah, she smells the bullshit. And honestly, I thought we were getting way closer to the end of this episode, and then I got to that scene, I was like, wow, there's a lot more time left.
There's still a lot that's got to happen.
So, this is awkward.
It's only 5 minutes. So, question.
I'm ready for it.
Is plain the correct word to use?
No.
Right. Okay, no. Good.
This is this moment right here with this woman, because they described her as plain and, like, homely and, like, hasn't gotten out of the house. This is when I realized, oh, this is why Sipowicz gets to fuck models. Because the scales are so fucking wrong. Like, this...
Oh, 100%.
Like, this woman, I was like, dude, you'd be lucky, dog. You'd be lucky, dog, if this was your lady friend. Fuck off.
The attitude he has, the fucking physique that he has, and the life that he lives, he's lucky that this woman even speaks words to him.
And he's also like, the fact that he's like, don't light the candle to this guy.
Yeah, don't light the candle. She may think I want to have sex with her.
Like, and then he turns it out. Like, what is the point? What's the point of that? It's so weird. But this woman, played by Juliana Donald, I haven't seen her in anything before or since, but We had the same thought. Like, she showed up and I was like, dude, score. You scored, bro. Like, have a decent time. Have a decent time.
You were thinking, like, you were going to have to date, like, the witch from fucking Princess Bride. and this woman came through the door. Like, this is why this show is written by only men.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, that's why Sybilis is always banging models.
Yeah, 100%. Well, also, this moment here where he's like, look, like, if it seems like I'm being weird, it's because I haven't done this in a while. And honestly, the only thing you're keeping me from is falling asleep watching the news. And she kind of gives this, like, okay, let's give it another shot. She should just be like, no, I'm fucking out of here. You're an asshole. Like,
yeah, I'm good. Like,
I didn't do anything.
And then she plays a funny joke, though. She does drop a joke.
She drops a joke and a smile that's like, bro, fucking, you're so lucky you get a second chance. Fuck you.
Yeah, you're lucky. You're lucky I decided to slum it today.
So this scene, I don't know if I'm being too mean, but like, fuck Katie, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So Katie is obviously upset. She is passive aggressive as fuck because she's like she's being short with him. And then she says something like, well, you're lying, but that's fine. That's just the pain I have to deal with. And it's like, okay, fucking out with it. At this point,
you seem distressed. And then she's like, well, you lied to me.
And he's like, what did I lie about? And then she knows he's lying. He knows that he's lying. But he lets
her. How does she know, though?
She's heard him lie for years. That's how. And honestly, I thought if she had gone with the attitude of, like, I thought you were going to go drink, then she has a right to be way more angry. But she's literally still passive-aggressive after he explains, like, it was a date that I was set up on. And then she's like, I'm upset that you lied. And then he's like, okay, I'm sorry that I lied. I understand it gets me flustered and angry, and it's not something that... It's not something that what's his name should see, right? And he goes like, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't do that in front of my kid. And then she's like, I want you to date me. And he's like, what? Is that the fucking problem here?
Yeah.
Is that the real problem?
It gets weird.
Yeah. Because if that's...
But he can't date her. She's too homely.
Yeah, and that's the other part of it now. It's like, well, I can't go out with you. I'm the main character of this TV show. You need to be a fucking 10. I had to slog through a date with a 7.5.
Yeah.
A fucking 10 in Idaho.
You need to get slogging on that treadmill. You think I'm going to be dating you?
Look, you are attractive enough to watch my kid.
It's actually really funny. You're attractive enough to watch my kid, cook us dinner, and hang out when I say it's cool for you to stay later. Well, that's about it.
It's so fucked up. Like, I'm so glad we had that same moment watching this episode, because when Cynthia, the woman, showed up, and comes through the door, I was like, dude, fucking good for you, dude. That's crazy. And then the second he started talking to her, I was like, she should get up and fucking leave. Like, she should leave. And then when she gives him a second chance, you're like, okay, well, you know, whatever. I guess it's a TV show. And then when Sibwitz comes back and then she's like, I wish you would date me. And my first thought was like, well, obviously you're not attractive enough. We've seen how this show works. Like the woman we just saw was considered plain. Like, I don't know where you think you're getting. Sorry, Katie. Yeah. It was so fucked
the
up.
The woman you just saw, I think Andy uses the word disfigured. So, like, yeah, you ain't getting no screen time.
Oh my gosh. And oh my, it's so, it's crazy, because we've had moments with Katie Sipowicz, because Katie is into the program, as we say, and she went, like, super religious with it, where she'll bring up Jesus every time they talk about it.
So weird.
So when he comes back,
what does Jesus have to do with you not being able to stop drinking?
Well, if you follow the program, everything. But what I love is he like goes like it's just such great juxtaposition where he's like, look, I'm gonna lie to my ex-wife who takes care of my kid now because who's gonna do it? My wife's dead and I need to go on dates. So he goes on the date. The woman is very attractive, and then he comes back, and then his wife's like, I wish you would date me, and it's like, no, you see the standard you gotta live up to with this guy? You're out. You had your chance when he was a drunk.
Okay.
Now that he's clean, he's only going for models.
Yeah, you only get a shot at this when I have a substance abuse issue. That's when you're cleared to play that game.
Oh man, and I also love the you're good enough to watch my kid. Well,
yeah, that's it. Like literally.
anything
like,
else?
Spoilers. Cut this part out. But that's literally what he tells her at some point, and so she just gets up and leaves.
Wait, Katie?
Yeah, he doesn't tell her like. He doesn't, like, tell her, like, you're good enough to watch my kid, but he kind of, like, acts like it.
Fucking Sipowicz, man. Well, anything else about this episode before we call it quits?
No, I think that's it for me.
Eddie Gibson comes back, character that's kind of been there since the beginning and is there almost all the way to the end.
I like this episode. I think it's a good episode.
It's an interesting episode. It's pretty good. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on. I think this date that he goes on, this blind date, is like a clear moment in the show where they made a statement about Sipowicz that's like, okay, so these women then? Like, it was clearly a decision where it's like, we're going to try and pass this off as normal.
I also feel like it might be an answer to, like fans of the show complaining. Like, it has been a while, you know? I mean, not that long, but, like, you know, Sylvia's been gone for a bit. He is the main character, like, so I think maybe it's, like, people complaining, like, hey, is she gonna get back out there, blah, 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 and so this is their, like, answer to that. I don't know.
It's opening up a possibility of Sipowicz having some issues with Katie and possibly dating, and it's interesting. Anyway.
Sipowicz is always having fucking problems with Katie, so.
What else is new?
Yeah, there's a reason why they shouldn't be married anymore. It is, like, in the little snippets you get to see of their life, it seems like they're just better off as friends.
Well, I mean, and we'll get to it in later episodes this season, but I find it really fucking awkward that she just kind of becomes Theo's second mom.
Yeah, it's mad weird.
It's really weird that it's kind of like, well, she's like the second mom, and then Sipowicz's like, well, I'm not going to date her. Like, that's not happening. She can watch him and basically be, you know, my partner in raising this child.
A mother figure to him.
But I'm like, no. Anyway. That's season 7, episode 9, Jackass. We gotta go.
Later.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have just a need for more NYPD Blue in your life, you can check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants, What Would Sipowicz Do, a collection of articles about the show, and then Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, which is on Amazon for 99 cents. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is where you find podcasts, where you're listening to it now. If you could do me a huge, huge favor and rate and review the show wherever you are listening to it. It's how people see it in the algorithm. And then hopefully more people listen to our show, but more importantly, watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast, and we are on Twitter for the time being at Asher Bros Pod. And new episodes are coming out every other Tuesday. We have another podcast, the Asher Brothers Podcast, which is available wherever NYPD Blue Balls is. But that does not have a regular schedule. In fact, we haven't posted one in a long time, but that doesn't mean one might pop up on a random occasion. Have a good one. Peace.